Thank you. We hear a lot about postmodernism, postmodernity, postmodern people. What does it actually mean? Are you postmodern? Am I postmodern? If there is such a thing as postmodernity, where did it come from? Is it a movement? What is it? I would suggest that postmodernism is basically a world view. The Germans have a very nice word for it, Weltanschauung. You know, Germans have a word for many different things that you find difficult to translate in other languages, like sauerkraut and more such words. But it is a particular way of thinking, a particular way of looking at the world. Now, you might say that there have been different periods in the history of thought. When we go way back, there was the period of the Middle Ages, a period where people were open to magic and mystery. Then that gradually gave way to a period of what we call the Enlightenment, humanism, Renaissance, where people were discovering that you can get at truth not mainly by mysterious avenues, by magic, but by using your brain, by a rational approach to life. And we actually call that period that started when the Middle Ages ended the period of modernity. So let's first of all agree that this afternoon, when we use the word modern, it is not in opposition to old-fashioned. But modern is something that many people would say is basically behind us. Or maybe some people are still modern, but other people have moved beyond being modern, beyond the way of thinking that came after the Middle Ages. And these people have become postmodern. And this way of thinking, either modern or postmodern, affects all areas of life. Now, it would be tempting to talk about the philosophical background for postmodernity. It would take quite a bit of time to go into any kind of detail. But in particular, in the 19th century, there were a number of philosophical currents that were putting people in a particular direction. Whereas in the modern period, people had said, well, when you use your brain, when you read the original sources, you can find out how it is. Whereas gradually in the 19th century, people were beginning to say, now wait a minute. When we read something, that was an interpretation of how the original writer saw it. Now you are reading it, and you have a filter through which you interpret what you're reading, what you find in those sources. And what I find may not be quite the same as what you find, because it is a matter of interpretation. So truth, it's not just that simple. You go and look for it. No, there is this dimension of interpretation. Then there were people, For instance, like Friedrich Nietzsche, who said, well, maybe we cannot find any truth at all. Maybe that is too much to hope for. We have an opinion, yes. But finding truth, capital T, no, that is pretty difficult. Then there were other philosophers who were talking about the role of language. Well, people had usually said, it's clear. We have words and we give those words a particular meaning. Some philosophers were beginning to say, well, some groups give a particular meaning to this particular word. That is their jargon. That is what they called their language game. But other groups may use the same words, but may mean something quite differently, because the meaning of a particular term is very much shaped by the kind of community where that word is being used. Other philosophers were talking about structuralism and how that really did not work all that well. Whereas philosophers and scientists had been looking for structures in cultures and were saying, well, basically all cultures show the same basic elements, and when you compare, there is a clear structure. Now they were saying, well, this is actually not something that is so evident. It's often something that we have superimposed on the data that we were looking at. So there were all kinds of philosophical currents that were preparing for a different kind of attitude towards truth. Truth was not that safe, not that secure, as people had often thought. On the basis of these and other philosophical currents, there were a number of people that we consider the founding fathers of postmodernity. Whenever you read about postmodernism, then you will always find at least those four names. One of them is an American, Richard Rorty. The other three are French. And you see, two of them died actually quite recently. Now, if you take these names, you go to a library or go to Amazon, you find that they have written lots and lots of books. If you want to read those books, good luck. But most of them are pretty dense and are pretty difficult reading. So unless you are very determined, I would suggest that it is actually easier to find a book that is an introduction to the thinking of, rather than to read the sources themselves. But of course that's up to you. Now, what did these people say? What were some of the essential aspects of postmodern thinking as it developed from the thinking of these people on the basis of these different philosophical currents and as it was worked out by others? Now, it's very difficult to actually put your finger on what exactly is the difference between postmodernism and modernism. But let me try and give you a number of the things that belong to postmodern thinking and see if you feel that you can recognize some of that. Maybe those of us who are somewhat older may say, well, I see some of that in my own children. Or maybe you see some of it in yourself or in people around you. In the modern period, people were interested in progress. They believed that progress was possible and was always going to happen. The generation before my generation felt that their children were going to do better than they had done. My generation still hoped that our children were going to do better than we had been doing. The generation that is growing up now do not believe that their children will do better than they are doing. There is no longer that sense that everything is getting better. There is progress, that we can be optimistic. On the contrary, there is a sense that of pessimism, of mounting problems in today's world. There is a sense that life on Earth is fragile. The environment is being destroyed, and they feel there is a great need to shape up and replace exploitation by cooperation and by being more protective of our environment and make sure that we are not exploiting it the way we do, and that some form of stewardship is necessary. A key aspect of the postmodern approach to life and to thinking is that there is a greater appreciation than there used to be for the non-rational dimensions of truth. Now, what do we mean by that? In the modern period, the main avenue to knowledge was reason. Think about it. Argue about it. Your brain. Today, many people would say, no, it's not only your brain. It's also your intuition. It's also your feelings. It's also experience. There are other dimensions to life that give you knowledge, not just reason. Well, we'll come to that a little later this afternoon, because after our break, we will talk about how postmodern thinking affects the Adventist Church and Seventh-day Adventists individually. But we can clearly see that in the modern period, when our doctrines were formulated, when we were talking about the interpretation of Daniel and the Revelation, it was very much a matter of the mind. You had to understand it. It had to fit rationally. Very little about feelings, experience. In fact, we felt in the modern period that we should distrust our feelings. Adventism was very much a matter of the mind, rather than a matter of experience and feelings. And that's why some of us find it a little difficult to accept that nowadays, in particular when you have youth meetings, etc., it is not so much the argument, what is being said, but the experience that we have together in our praise services. Postmodern people do not just trust their brain, but emphasize very much experience and the other aspects of knowing. Perhaps more important than anything else is the feeling of postmodern people that you cannot speak about truth with a capital T. Truth? Sure. You have your truth. Fine. You're happy with it. Congratulations. You have your truth. You're happy with it. Congratulations. It so happens I have my truth as well. But don't try to convince me that your truth is better than my truth. There are only truth, small t, plural. And there is a diversity of opinion, and nobody should be so bold as to say that he has the only right opinion. Now you can see that that is a significant step that differs from what we find in the modern period that we are leaving behind us, where we have the truth, capital T. What I believe is the truth. You will have to accept it or else. No. If you Seventh-day Adventists feel that you have the truth, more power to us. More power to you. But don't make it so that we will have to take everything that you accept also as our truth. Moreover, really, what does it matter? That what I believe is really the truth. The question is, does it work? And that's what people will tell you, don't they? If you say, well, this is what I believe, then people say to you, well, if it works for you, fine. Wouldn't work for me. So don't try to push it upon me. So truth has a totally different dimension. It's not what is true, but what is the outcome? Does it help you? Knowledge is replaced by opinion, by interpretation, and we are not trying to all think the same. Now, whereas modern people wanted to look for everything that is harmonious, that holds things together for unity, postmodern people are much more open to diversity, for difference. It's instructive to go to a museum of contemporary art. You go to a museum of contemporary art, you find that many works of art are what they call a collage. Different kind of things put together, different styles used intermingling, different kind of techniques, different kind of mediums being used. It's really instructive to spend an afternoon in a museum of contemporary art and see how this affects the world of art. Look at some modern and look at some postmodern buildings. And actually, it's very clear in the world of architecture. You remember the Twin Towers in New York? You have a picture. What is so significant about the Twin Towers? It's all rectangular. It's all one and the same shape. It's all the same kind of windows. It's efficiency that's written all over the building. Look at some postmodern buildings, where you find that different kind of techniques and different kind of styles are being used and put together. And if you have an eye for it, you will find that many of these postmodern buildings, they have corners that are not quite rectangular, and they have walls that don't quite go straight up, and they have different kinds of columns and different kinds of materials. Go to a shopping mall and see how each of the shops has a different kind of architecture. Putting these different things together, you find it also in literature. Many of the postmodern books that are written on different levels, you might say, and that play in different periods. It just skips from one chapter to the next. It goes back and forth. There is this mixture of different elements. Now, when you look at postmodern people, postmodern life, you find that this diversity is also reflected in the morals that people have. In the modern period, things were either good or bad. And within a particular society, it was decided what was permissible, what was not permissible. In a postmodern society, we all have our own moral systems. If you like what you're doing, as long as you don't hurt somebody, that's okay. Who should care? So there is this relativity. There is not this clear sense of certain things being right and other things being totally wrong. There is also this sense that a person is fragmented. Personality. Let me illustrate. If I would have asked my mother, how do you define yourself? She would have said, I am a Seventh-day Adventist. She divided the world in Adventists and non-Adventists. That was her universe. Now, when I define myself differently. I guess I'm a little bit postmodern. Yes, I'm an Adventist. But, you know, I also define myself as a male. And I happen to be a Dutchman. I happen to be a pastor, yes. I happen to be a father, a husband. There are many different ways in which I define myself. Adventism, my faith, being one of them. But there are many other aspects. And depending on the circumstances, these aspects will play a larger or a lesser role. Derrida, one of these four guys whose names I mentioned, if you would ask him the question, or asked him the question, because he's dead now, you can't ask him questions, but if you ask him a question at that time, I said, how are you, Mr. Derrida? His answer would be, at what floor? Now, that's a funny answer, isn't it? What he meant to say is that he compared his life with a house with many floors and rooms. And depending on where he was in his house, he would answer that question. Depending on what kind of set of circumstances were defining his life at that particular point in time. And you find more and more that people are able to fragment their lives. They have often, and you see that even within our own community, people have a different set of friends, people with whom they associate, depending on the area of their life, the compartment of their life. They may be at a sports club, behave differently, have particular friends that they will not see at work, that are very different from those that they see at church. And often the language that they use and the way they conduct themselves will differ from one set of circumstances and the other set of circumstances. Of course, some people can do that in an amazing way and be very nice at home and be brutal Nazi agents in their work. Now, most of us are not that far compartmentalized or fragmented, but the postmodern person today is far more fragmented than the modern person was just a generation or so ago. Postmodern people have very little commitment to organizations or to jobs. in the past, in the modern period, if somebody stayed with a job for 40 years and then, you know, got his golden watch or whatever when he would retire, that was considered to be a person with commitment. Today, that person is considered to be somebody without initiative. I remember I was trying to hire somebody when I was working in the Dutch Union for a particular post. And I had done a couple of interviews with people and was talking with my daughter about what I had done in the past week. And I said, well, I've been looking for somebody to fill this particular post. I have had some talks. And she said, well, have you come to some kind of a conclusion? I said, well, there's somebody that I like, but there's one thing that I don't like. And this person has had 3 different jobs in the last 10 years. And I'm not sure that I want that. And then she said, well, you know, in what time do you live? What age do you come from? Because that's a good sign. Because that's what you want. People who have different things on their CV. Not people who just start something and stick with it for the rest of their life. You don't want that. And that is something that is quite different from what we had in the past. There is no such commitment to a job or to an organization for that matter. People find it very difficult also to join different kinds of organizations, also find it very difficult at times to join a church. Going to church, that may be something that they will do from time to time, but actually becoming a member, that is something that is quite difficult. One of the hallmarks, marks of postmodernity is also that postmodern philosophers, postmodern thinkers say there is no longer a story, a theory, a narrative that covers all of life. Now you take socialism. A real socialist would really apply his socialist principles to every facet of life. Because socialism explained everything. Marxism explained everything. To some people, capitalism explains everything. For some people, Christianity. The postmodern person says, no, you cannot have such a theory. And certainly not if you feel that everybody should join in having that same philosophy. Because inevitably, those people who are Christians and want everybody to be Christians, those people who are socialists and want everybody to be socialists, sooner or later, they will use force. Sooner or later, they will use tactics that are totally unacceptable. We should not have such all-embracing narratives, but look for the smaller stories. Then there is a word, and just bear with me, because soon I come to something that is a little bit more tangible. There is a feeling that we should apply what they call deconstruction. What do they mean? Modern people say when you look at a text, when you look at a book, then you look for what is there. And you find the meaning. Postmodern people say, when you look at a text, when you read a book, when you listen to an argument, try to find out what's not there. What has been forgotten? Try to find out where you're being manipulated. Where the person tries to say more than he can actually prove. Do not just look for the main players in the story, but also look at the people in the margin and the things that are not so evident. So really try to tear the story apart and see what fits, but in particular that which does not fit. Well, that's a different way of looking at things. But these grand stories, these big plans that would apply everywhere, you be very careful with that. And I'll come back a little bit to the idea that when you have a world church and you want to have programs that cover the whole world, you know, these grand stories, that doesn't really strike a chord with postmodern people. They say we're looking for the smaller things close to us rather than to those big things that are supposed to do everything. And we are looking for things that we don't like, and not only for the things that we like. We be careful, we are suspicious. There is a shift in science. The modern period was the time where science was everything. Scientists, you know, you could trust. They were the people that were going to build the future. But gradually, in the postmodern period, people come to the conclusion that not all knowledge is good. Actually, some knowledge has brought us into deep trouble. Moreover, not all knowledge can be brought into one scheme. Whereas in the modern period, we felt that everything could be put, everything would fit together. Nowadays, scientists find things that they wonder, how does that fit with the theories that we already have? And that means sometimes that we have to rethink all kinds of things. Also, we know that there is a commercial element in much science that makes us very suspicious. Much of the research is being paid by somebody. Think of what the pharmaceutical industry puts into the universities. Of course, when you pay for research, at the end of the day, you want to have some profit. Now, did you have the swine flu here in Britain? In the Netherlands, it was decided by the government that we would have 2 injections, I think, for every person in the country. 30 million plus doses were going to be bought and were going to be stocked, because this was a very, very a grave danger that was coming upon us. Now, right from the beginning, some people were suspicious, because who was saying this? And it could be shown that there were some people, scientists, with direct lines to the pharmaceutical industry. Well, that gave a great dent in the minds of many people to the authority of scientists, because here they had seen something that was clearly playing on the anxiety of the people, but was clearly lining the pockets of some people, not just honest science. And there was so much of that that they saw. Scientists feel that it is not that easy to describe everything that is discovered in the universe. They find things that do not quite operate according to the laws that they had earlier described and discovered. Actually, see, they found that some objects that are being observed change simply by being observed. Now, don't ask me to explain that, because I don't understand it. But gradually, even the scientists will say there is so much that we don't know and probably never will know. Whereas in the modern period, it was clear, we just work a little harder and we will discuss it. We will discover everything, and all that we discover will be for the benefit of society, for the people. Now, we could say a lot of things about modernity and postmodernity, but let me just bring it together, because I want to spend a little more time on how it affects our church, and of course that is in preparation for our next step, and that is how we make our truth relevant to people who are beginning to think more and more in a postmodern way. Modern people in the past, still quite a few people today, their emphasis is on mind, on reason, on logic. There is a systematic order in everything that happens and exists. They believe in technological and economic progress, harmony, unity, ability, human abilities. But postmodern people, they say there is a limitation to what we know, to what we understand. It's not only our brain, it's not only our mind, it's also our feelings, our intuition, our fantasy, our dreams. There's not one truth that explains everything, but these ideologies, these systems, are only of relative value. They're critical or reluctant regarding commitment. They're not that easily committed to either a job, a position. They're critical about human ability. They feel that life is fragmentary, incomplete, and they like diversity, difference, opposites. Now, maybe I should just finish off this section to have more time for the next section. Postmodern man, and see whether you recognize something in it, in yourself, in others around you, is more ambivalent. It can be, but then maybe not. Indecisive. What am I going to do with my life? Do you know any young people who have gone to university and have changed the topic that they were studying about three times? They simply don't know. They're indecisive. Postmodern man, deconstructing, suspicious. What is behind things? What is there behind this G20? What is there, you know, with capitalism, Occupy? All these things that seem bigger than we can understand. What is behind there? They're relativizing. There may not be a perfect solution. We'll go for the least objectionable. They're skeptical, but at the same time, they're open to mystery. You know, there's one thing about postmodern people that is especially interesting to us. And that is that church is out. Spirituality is in. Church was something that belonged to the modern period. You were part of a church. That was the most important thing, a member of a church. Today, most people, or I wouldn't say most people, but many people, really have no use for the church. They don't want to belong to a church. When you ask them, do you believe? Oh yeah, I believe in something. Spirituality? Yes. Go to a bookstore. Look at all the books about angels. Look about all the books that deal with the occult. Spirituality, yes. About 20 years ago, and I don't know whether that is true to the same extent here in Scotland as it is in the place where we come from. But at least in the Netherlands, 20 years ago, you could talk about anything. You could talk to other people about your sex life. No problem. But you could not talk about your religion. That was private. That's something you didn't talk about. If you talked about religion in your workplace, you were in trouble. That has totally changed. You can talk about your religion. Now, in many companies, you cannot spend your time going around proselytizing for your particular organization. But talking about your faith, talking about your religion is okay. When I was baptized, when I was about 15 years of age, I kept it a secret for my friends at school. Didn't want them to know that I was being baptized by immersion, you know, strange, in some kind of small, funny church. At least that was the way I was sure they would look at it. So I didn't talk about it. I am surprised when today I see young people in the church being baptized. They bring a busload of friends. They feel they can do that. Apparently that is okay. So that is something that has changed dramatically. But yet the threshold to the church is formidable. And you know, we listened to nice organ music this morning, but to many postmodern people, the organ has become a symbol of everything that is about church and about this kind of religion, organized, institutionalized religion. And of course, some of the things that are actually happening in some church organizations, and when we think of some of the problems that the Roman Catholic Church is facing, that doesn't help in the image that Christianity has, the image of the church. Postmodern person is an eclectic person. That is to say, he picks and chooses from everywhere. And this is what Lyotard, one of these philosophers, said. You know, and this is already a little bit dated, but a postmodern person, he listens to reggae, he watches a Western, he eats at McDonald's, but then again, he may have supper in a Hungarian restaurant. He travels and he knows all the places where you can buy perfume and other duty-free at a good price. And he looks at a TV quiz as an exercise in knowledge, and not much beyond that. Derrida says, a person, a postmodern person, is somebody who lives on different floors. Bauman, another postmodern philosopher, says, a postmodern person is a pilgrim in search of his destiny. He doesn't know where he's going. He is a flaneur. He thinks, he determines where he goes, but he is drawn by advertising, attractions, and is always sapping. Now maybe that is a very beautiful, well, it's not a beautiful, but a very fitting description of a postmodern person, sapping. But the fact that we have so many choices is that we really don't pay attention to anything in depth. Do you have a television with about 100 channels? If so, you know how difficult it is to stay with one particular program, because you keep on sapping all the time. You don't have, like the modern person, would look at a TV program for the week and choose a couple of programs that you didn't want to miss and write down the times. That's not the way postmodern people watch television. Anyway, I hope this has given you a little bit of a sense of what the postmodern person is. Modern people, postmodern people.